Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio program is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring sustainability, local foods, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folks. Our conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking The Local Vore Way, a book by Amy Kotler, and online holiday gift ideas. Over the weekend, I actually begged my husband to gift wrap the apartment door and put up Kwanzaa decorations. This Friday, I'll be attending a Hanukkah party, so I am all in the holiday Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas mood. So as you guys know, that Hot Grease is on Twitter under Food Cultures, and we're on Facebook. We have a fan page. So I sent out a little survey to all of my followers, asking them to suggest the best places online to buy holiday gifts for all of our food friends, or more so holiday gifts that are food related. So I thought I would share it with you guys on air. So one of my food culturalist fan page Facebook persons, Lynn, she gave two suggestions for food. Neiman Marcus, that was a great place. I'm like, okay, that's kind of pricey, Lynn, but I found the chocolate chip cookies on Neiman Marcus, $24. You can get a 10 or the mix. And why I chose this one, because she just gave us the name Neiman Marcus. She didn't give us the chocolate chip cookie idea as a gift. But I chose it because Neiman Marcus has this very unique urban legend about this chocolate chip cookie thing. I think some people say that, or people have said in the past, it's like $250 to get the recipe for this chocolate chip cookie, but that's not true. So for $24, if you have a family member or a friend that absolutely loves chocolate chip cookies and you want to impress them by sending them a gift from Neiman, for $24, you can get either the mix or the 10. Another suggestion from Lynn, as well as Meredith Mojaleski. Meredith actually was on a previous show. Dina DeLuca. So I went on Dina DeLuca, and for all of these suggestions, I basically kind of went on and said, what would be the best idea for the sustainable / good food movement person? And so for Dina DeLuca, they have a lot of great things. Some things very sustainable, some of them maybe not as sustainable, but the Dina DeLuca cookbook, I think, is a perfect idea for anybody that's it's a huge cook or trying to be a cook, or someone just that likes to collect cookbooks, or even the Dina DeLuca gift card. It gives someone the opportunity to be able to just purchase whatever they would like. You can do like, if someone gave me a gift card from Dina DeLuca, I probably would do like the tea club. You could get like, pick your tea every month and they send you a bag of tea. So Meredith and Lynn, thank you for that Dina DeLuca suggestion. I had another person on Twitter. I haven't had a lot of conversation with this person, but I put it out there saying, any online suggestions? And he replied back. His Twitter name is aburke8. And he suggested two really great ideas or places online to get gifts. First one is King Arthur Flour, which is kingarthurflour.com. Some of you guys may know, but King Arthur Flour is a 200-year-old flour makers. They're up in Vermont. There are tons of things on this website that you could get for the person that's an at-home baker, from flours, cake mixes, to cookie cutters, you name it. So great, great suggestion, aburke8 on Twitter. And another one, I never heard of this one. It's called Penzeys. It's P-E-N-Z-E-Y-S. And apparently this website or this company, they sell a lot of spices and pure vanilla extract and just a lot of great dried herbs. And one of the most elaborate gifts they have for $219. I'm not sure how many people would be purchasing this, but I thought it was pretty interesting. They have a big crate of spices, and some of the things in this crate includes double strength, pure vanilla extract, and fine ground white pepper. I don't know who will be spending $219 on a gift for someone with spices, but hey, you never know. And lastly, another great find. I'm on this serious salt caramel kick. So when I saw the suggestion from Raganella 7, Liz, she suggested a West Coast-based chocolate company, Franz Chocolate. They have a great 20-piece gray and smoked sea salt caramels. I think that's an absolutely perfect gift for someone who's really into the whole sweet salty thing. So she actually suggested the Franz chocolate, particularly the 20-piece gray smoked sea salt caramels. So if any listeners, if you're listening now and you have other suggestions and you would like for me to share them via Twitter or Facebook, just reach out to me via my Facebook fan page as well as Twitter at Food Culturists. So we're going to take a short break and we're going to come back with Amy Kotler. She is the author of The Locavore Way. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. FYI, starting today, we will be live 24/7 at heritageradio.com. Our second guest today, or actually our first guest today, is Amy Kotler. She's the author of The Locavore Way. Amy is a longtime advocate of local eating. She's worked as a chef, a caterer, cooking teacher, recipe developer, and cookbook author. Her books include Wrap It Up, The Secret Garden Cookbook, and the Massachusetts Farm to School Cookbook, which is available free online. Amy, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thrilled to be here. Excuse my voice, I got a little bit of a cold, but I'm still thrilled to be here.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us. So, Amy, let's get right into The Locavore Way. Why if you go into the bookstore, or the library, there are tons of books about locavorism, about the food system. Why choose to do a book, another book about local eating or how to be a local locavore?
That's a very good question. I felt that, you know, after 20 years working as a local food advocate and 30 years as a chef, I felt I had sort of a real good sense of context, and as a cooking teacher and public educator, I felt I could bring it all together in one place that was clear and to the point. I really wanted to write a practical how-to guide, an answer to the omnivore's dilemma, where people could get a sense of context to make the decisions they needed to make, and they could refer to it as they needed to. So I wanted to pack it all into one book because we get a lot of confusing information from a lot of different sources. I also felt like, and still feel like, there is fabulous information about what's wrong with the food system. You know, we hear from brilliant people like Michael Pollan and many other really strong writers about what's wrong and what should be done to right it. I wanted to write a book for the general public about what they can do on a day-to-day basis to make a difference. Sort of a yes.
What I love about your book, Amy, is that it actually appeals to both the newbie and the person that's pretty experienced in the local food movement. One of the first chapters or the first few pages, you give like 15 ways to become a locavore. And I just think that's just very simple, because a lot of people hear the term and they're like, okay, what do I need to do? But it's very plain. One of my favorite ones, my two favorites, number 6, you have to have a party, and 13 is to give local food as gifts.
That's right. And they are two of my favorites as well. I mean, I think that local food is something to celebrate. And it's also a great way to draw in friends who are less familiar with what local food is all about, to have a local food party, particularly a potluck, which is also good economically, and ask everyone to bring something in season and local. And it's a great way to celebrate. In terms of gifts, I mean, I just love showing up with a local wine, hard cider, you know, cheese and crackers. And it really makes for not just a standard gift, but a conversation piece that really sort of opens discussion on really important issues while enjoying your food.
So the first, I think, 2 or 3 chapters basically speaks to the newbie. You have a great section. A lot of times, family members or friends or people that I'm talking to, and I tell them I have a radio show, and when I go into my whole rant about eating local, they're like, well, why should I eat local? I mean, you have given me like points to be able to clearly say why I or what I should say to that person. I love the way you did that.
Thank you. I worked hard on it, and I've talked, been out educating the public for a long time, so I sort of really distilled the points that I thought really reached into people's minds, hearts, and appetites.
So let's talk a little bit about how you broke down CSAs, or community supported agriculture, and the buying club chapter. A lot of people may go to farmers markets, or they may hear it. If you're not in New York, if you're listening in Kansas, maybe you've never heard of a CSA.
That's right. Maybe if you live in New York, you've never heard of a CSA, well, although they're certainly readily available. You know, a CSA is a community-supported agriculture farm, and I was very fortunate to be on the ground floor of the development of the CSA movement, because I work with Robin Van Ann, who sort of spearheaded the CSA movement in America. And we now have, and that was 1981, and we now have close to 2,000 in America. Basically, you buy a share of the harvest, and you pay your farmer up front, generally, and so you share in the risk and the bounty, and you collect a piece of that harvest in the form of a delicious bag of groceries once a week. And what I talk about in the book is this the right way for you to buy local? Does it suit your lifestyle? Does it suit your needs? What to do with some of the bounty? And I also track the different kinds of things you'll get over the season. And amazingly enough, even out in Kansas, there are CSAs. We think of CSAs as a city thing because it certainly in New York, Just Food has brought so many CSAs into the city.
Exactly.
And they're just a phenomenal organization. But they are all over the country, and they're an interesting way to buy local. You really get a direct connection with a farmer, and also a real sense of nature, even if you live in the city, because you really take the flow from the early greens, you know, to late in the season when you're at the apples and butternut squash stage, as we are now.
And you give a great example. I think there's a CSA in Maryland that you actually highlighted, and you break it down like each week, a sample shared list. And I think this is just perfect. These chapters are perfect for the person who just totally stepping into the movement and may not know what they would get in a CSA. I hear people sometimes like, okay, what exactly am I going to get? So for you to even put this in the book, I mean, It's like almost the best book of coming into 2010 to have this, Amy.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way. I wanted to make it really tangible. I wanted to give people really tangible how-to examples, but also give them a little sense of context for making their decisions so they can know why they're making the decisions they're making about food, but and then they can go out and use their intelligence and go ahead and do it. But unless they have real tangible look at, hey, what am I getting this week? it's hard to make those decisions.
Let's talk a little bit about buying clubs. I think this chapter in the book or this area, buying clubs, for some folks who are into the local food movement already, I would say I'm one of those people. I mean, I know buying clubs, but I don't have a lot of information about buying clubs. Can you just share your general thought about some of the barriers or information that's not being received about buying clubs? Or is it intentionally that buying clubs are kind of low on the radar, folks?
Well, you know, they're ad hoc. I remember certainly at the beginning of the co-op movement, most food co-ops started as buying clubs, and they were kind of under the radar too because they were filling a need that wasn't filled by the conventional supermarkets and ways to shop. And so they were kind of under the radar. And buying clubs are a little under the radar as well because they sprung up as a way to fill a need, but they haven't yet been sort of formalized across America. And there are more and more of them. Generally, you've got to go to the market. You've got to ask around. You've got to Google around. Certainly other locavores you know, farmers you may shop for. And, like, for example, I just found one near me that started up a year ago. It's about 40 miles from me, and it's a grains and beans buying club.
Wow, what kind of grains and beans? What types do they have?
Oh, I'm really excited. I haven't yet received my first order. It's coming in a week, and I'm just totally excited. They have, let me see, they had, I think, 15 kinds of beans, and they had, it's mostly wheat, and you can get it ground or you can get it unground, so you can get wheat berries or you can get flour. And I'm looking at some of the beans here: Black Cherokee, Vermont Cranberry, Boston Favorite, and also oats, barley, rye, and corn.
What about the quantities? Is it big for a person two people or an entire
I'm
family?
I'm splitting the share because it was too much for me. 30 pounds of wheat is too much for me, so I'm splitting it, and so it'll be 15 pounds of wheat, and I'll probably get, like, out of that, I'll probably have 10 pounds of flour and 5 pounds of grains, which really isn't that much. And then it's 50 pounds of beans, and I'll split that and get 25 pounds of beans. And 25 pounds of beans will last me a long time, but they won't go bad. They're dried. And the same thing with the grains. Some of them I'll, keep cool. And also, I'm going to be getting 5 pounds each of flax and sunflower seeds, which I'll now get half of because I'm doing a half share. So I actually think it'll be a good share. Beans and grains are kind of a good base in my diet, and I've been feeling like, God, I've got to go more local. And that's kind of part of the fun is, you know, exploring new territories to buy local and seeking out new sources. And buying clubs is one of those ways. Certainly, meat is really the most common kind of buying club formed. And I think we're going to find more and more, you know, locally raised and sustainable meat near us. But until that time, I think buying clubs take a wonderful role.
You said something very important. You said share and connect. And you talk about that a little bit in the book about the locavore movement or shopping, buying locally, eating locally. It connects people. And I think people don't say that enough, but what you just said about sharing your beans and wheat and meat and all that, you just brought it all together of why one of the reasons people should get on the bandwagon of local food.
Well, I think that local food is a lot about connection, and I think that we live in a very disconnected world, and I think it's another way. Green markets, for example, farmers markets have really become like the new, you know, town green where people meet and greet and enjoy each other. And also around the table, I think that very few of us sit down the way we used to, or maybe never did. And sharing our food is a way we bond. And I think knowing where our food comes from connects us to nature and connects us to so many important things. And I think that in a disenfranchised world, it's something we can do on a very practical day-to-day basis that gives meaning to our lives.
Exactly. Well, we are going to take a short break, and we will be back with More Amy Cotler and the Locavore Way. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. On the phone, we have Amy Cotler. She is the author of The Locavore Way and is taught at the Culinary Institute of America and the Institute of Culinary Education. She was the food forum host for the New York Times on the web and a major contributor to the revised Joy of Cooking.
Amy, glad to be here.
Glad you're here. Also, Amy, you at amycotler.com, you have tons of information, recipes. You can follow you on Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I have a local food blog that's very seasonal and is very filled with a lot of weekday recipes that are easy to prepare using fresh local foods.
So you started off as a chef, is that correct?
That's correct.
Wow. So you have a great chapter on, oh my gosh, great recipes for anybody. Someone that's starting in the local foods movement or the person that's been in it for a while. How did you go about in doing the recipes? Were those recipes that you had been doing for years, or did you sit down and say, I'm going to come up with some new things?
Well, a little bit of both. I've been a recipe developer for about 10 years, so I've developed close to 1,000 recipes for myself and for other people. And I decided to get down to brass tacks and do things that were really near and dear to my heart. So I wanted to do two things with the recipes. I wanted to include, you know, several handfuls of recipes that were easy to prepare and were really adaptable to seasonal food. So, for example, I have a market garden salad that you can replace with things as they come in season. I have a risotto that you can cook very easily now with butternut squash, or you could cook it in the spring with peas or asparagus. So I make what I call open recipes, adaptable recipes. And you say, how do you come up with these things? I can't not come up with them. I wake up in the morning and I think I can just taste the next thing that's coming. It's just the way I'm built. And the other thing I tried to do is really empower readers to improv a little bit so that they can go to the market and say, you know, what's that funky root vegetable? Oh, it's a celery root, but I don't have a clue what to do with it. They can look up any vegetable they see in the market alphabetically, and it has a bunch of ideas. You know, it'll say, take that celery root and boil it up with potatoes and mash it up into a smashed celery root and potato puree, and it'll be just absolutely divine. Or make it into a soup, and it gives you loose directions on how to work with a wide variety of produce items. So I wanted to both give some recipes, but also empower readers to branch out.
Yeah, I love that about the book. That's one of the great attributes. So you have a section called Dining Out, where you talk about how one should dine out and keeping the whole local food movement or local foods in mind. Could you just talk briefly about how should one dine out and if you're seeking local foods?
Well, you know, it's a really good question. We hear about local food every day, and then we go into our neighborhood restaurant, and everything's come off a big tractor load and been dumped into a freezer, it feels like. And so it really is important to start looking for restaurants that are serving local food. And there's a number of ways to do that. Certainly you can increase demand for local food by asking at your favorite neighborhood restaurant, because I tend to be an advocate and like to really get in people's faces about it. You can do that in a nice, polite way by saying, what's local on the menu? I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, you're fine.
And the other thing is that there's a Chef's Collaborative that it's a national organization of chefs interested in sustainable cuisine, and there you can look up on their website some local restaurants. It won't include all of them, but you can certainly get a good start. The other thing is to kind of look at the menu and say, are they serving the same vegetable with every entree? Because it may be that they're just not that interested. They're just buying a big bag of something. Certainly asking, and asking. And how I also find out is when I go to the farmers' markets, I ask farmers, who do you sell to? Where should I eat? Because then I know where the fresh food's going. There have been many leaders in the local food movement, certainly in the New York area. I think Peter Hoffman offhand at Savoy.
Right.
And there's some people have just gained a reputation for serving fresh local foods. So there's a few of the ways. Word of mouth is the best way. And really, you can get word of mouth by shopping where locavores shop. And that's, word gets out, oh, so-and-so really cooks seasonal foods. So-and-so has specials on their menus that are made with seasonal foods.
You touch on some of the lower-end restaurants or dining spots, such as, well, I don't even know if we're going to call these dining spots.
No.
A restaurant. You talked about Let's Be Frank. I think they're in San Francisco, based in California, which is a local sustainable hot dog stand. And you also talk about even Chipotle. I mean, they're going definitely on the route of having local ingredients at every location.
Yeah, you make a good point. I think people tend to think of the local movement as elitist, and there's certainly many of our top quality restaurants are using local foods, but it's no reason to blind ourselves to a local food that is more affordable for the rest of us. Certainly part of the local food movement should be that fresh local food is available for everyone. It's a very important point that I do like to drive home in the book. But that, you can buy local ice cream, It's made with local berries and local milk, an ice cream stand. There's things you can seek out that are much more affordable. I have a neighborhood diner near me. Well, nobody's really near me because I live in the country, but 10 miles away, which is near me. And, he makes pies with local apples. He uses butternut squash in his soups from the local farm. And he rotates his vegetables depending on what's around. And, he didn't even used to brag about it because he thought that was just the way to do things. And so local movement sort of took hold. And I said, hey, people will order those things because they know they're local. And now he brags about it on the menu. So you got to ask and you got to look around and you will find surprises in unexpected places.
Well, Amy, it seems like you've been a local food activist for years. And you have a beautiful chapter about how one can become a local food activist. What are your general thoughts of the movement, the good food movement now? Are you excited or happy about young people and different types of people, different colors of people that are joining the movement?
I am so excited. And 20 years ago, everybody thought I was a nut job. What is this all about local food? I was a caterer in Manhattan, and people would just think, what is it? You're going to give me dirty vegetables or something? Now, local food has gotten mainstream. I'm particularly encouraged by the diversity of people really engaged in the local movement, from Asians in Massachusetts who are growing Asian-style vegetables for markets when the demand is increasing, to Hispanics that are teaching sustainable agriculture, to African Americans that are setting up a food bank up north of me. And it is really a very diverse movement now, and wasn't really so much so in the beginning. And I'm very encouraged as much by the younger generation that has really said, we're not going to live on fast food. That we're backlashing against this stuff, and we're going to eat really local food grown close to home that's much more delicious because we care about our environment. So a lot of young kids who are involved with the environmental movement have jumped on the bandwagon as well. So I'm really excited about both the diversity and the youth of this movement as it changes and shifts. And I'm thrilled to have everybody jump on the bandwagon because it's a long haul, and it's not an easy thing because you're really going against our standard industrialized food system.
Exactly.
So the more the merrier.
Amy, congratulations on your book. I actually love the book. Please tell our listeners the title of your book and where they can find it and any other information. I think if you want to tell us your website again, that would be great.
It's Amy Cotler, C-O-T-L-E-R. It's AmyCotler.com. And you can get a lot of information right there. Feel free to contact me if you have questions about cooking seasonally as well. I'm always, always excited about getting feedback about my book.
Okay. And Amy, author of The Localvore Way, Discover and Enjoy the Pleasures of Locally Grown Food. Thank you, Amy, for chatting with us on Hot Grease. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you. Keep sizzling without hot grease. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you again for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Join me every Monday at 3:30. Until then, always take the road less traveled.